Life of St. Augustine by St. Pisidius. Part 7. Chapter 27. Service to the Needy and Sick. In his visitations, he adhered to the rule set forth by the Apostle, and visited only the widows and orphans in their afflictions. Yet, whenever it happened that he was requested by the sick to come in person and pray to the Lord for them and lay his hand upon them, he went without delay. But the monasteries of women he visited only in extreme emergencies. Furthermore, he said that in the life and habits of a man of God, that rule ought to be observed which he had learned from the practice of Ambrose of holy memory, namely, never to seek a wife for another man, nor to urge anyone who desired to go to war to do so, nor to accept an invitation to a feast in his own community. He gave as his reasons for each of these that if the husband and wife should happen to quarrel with each other, they might revile him who had brought them together. But clearly, if they themselves had previously agreed to marry, the priest to whom they came ought to offer his services, so that that which had been agreed upon and was pleasing to them should be confirmed or blessed. In the second case, in order that no one who had been recommended to military service might blame the one who encouraged him, if he suffered any ill through his own fault. And finally, lest by frequent participation in the customs peculiar to feasts, his vow of temperance should be broken. He also told us that he had heard of the very wise and godly reply of an illustrious man of blessed memory at the end of his life, and he warmly praised and extolled it. For when the venerable man lay abed in his last illness, and the chief members of the church were standing around his couch, watching him as he was about to depart from this world to be with God, they were overcome with grief at the thought that the church could be deprived of so great and glorious a prelate, and of his dispensation of the word and sacrament of God. And when they begged him with tears that he should ask of the Lord an extension of his life, he said to them, "I have not so lived that I should be ashamed to live among you. Yet I do not fear to die, for we have a Lord who is good." And our Augustine, in his later days, used to admire and praise these well-weighed words, for he said that we must understand that Ambrose added this second saying, "I do not fear to die, for we have a Lord who is good," so that no one might believe that from overconfidence in the purity of his own life he had first said, "I have not so lived that I should be ashamed to live among you." Now this he had said in reference to that which men can judge about a fellow man. But as for his judgment by the divine justice, he trusted rather in the Lord who is good, to whom he also said in the daily prayer, "Forgive us our trespasses." Moreover, toward the end of his life, Augustine very frequently repeated in this same connection the words of a certain fellow bishop and very intimate friend. For when he had gone to visit him several times as he drew near to death, and he had indicated by a gesture of his hand that he was soon to depart from this world, Augustine had said to him that he might still be of great benefit to the church if he lived. but that no one should think that he was captivated by a desire for this life. His friend had answered, "If I were never to die, it would be well. But if I am ever to die, why not now?" This sentiment was much admired by Augustine, and he praised him who had given voice to it. A man who feared God, indeed, but who had been born and brought up in a small town, and was not much educated in the art of reading. Compare, on the other hand, the attitude of a certain ailing bishop, of whom the holy martyr Cyprian speaks in this wise, in his letter which he wrote on mortality, saying, "When a certain one of our colleagues and fellow priests, wearied with infirmity and troubled at the near approach of death, prayed for an extension of his life, there stood by him, as he prayed, and was even now on the point of death, a youth venerable in glory and majesty, tall of stature and with radiant countenance. And mortal eyes could scarcely have endured to look upon him as he stood there, had not he, who was soon to depart from this world, already had power to behold such a being. And not without a certain indignation of soul and voice, the youth rebuked him, and said, 'You fear to suffer? You do not wish to die? What shall I do with you?'" Chapter 28. The books published by Augustine just before his death. Shortly before the time of his death, he revised the books which he had dictated and edited. Whether those which he had dictated in the time immediately following his conversion, when he was still a layman, or while he was a presbyter or bishop. And in those words which he had dictated or written, while he was as yet not so well acquainted with ecclesiastical usage, and had less understanding, whatsoever he found not agreeing with the ecclesiastical rule, this he himself censured and corrected. Thus he wrote two volumes, whose title is On the Revision of Books. And he sometimes complained that certain books had been carried off by some of his brethren before his careful revision, although he revised them later. Some of his books, however, he left uncompleted at the time of his death. Furthermore, in his desire to be of help to all, both those who could read many books and those who could not, he made excerpts from both the sacred testaments, the old and new, of the divine commandments and prohibitions relating to the conduct of life, and with the addition of a preface, made one volume of them. He who wishes may read it, and learn therefrom how obedient or disobedient he is to God. This work he desired to have called The Mirror. But a short time after, it came about, in accordance with the divine will and command, that a great host of savage foes, Vandals and Alans, with some of the Gothic tribe interspersed, and various other peoples, armed with all kinds of weapons and well trained in warfare, came by ship from the regions of Spain across the sea, and poured into Africa, and overran it, and everywhere through the regions of Mauritania, even crossing over to others of our provinces and territories, raging with cruelty and barbarity. They completely devastated everything they could by their pillage, murder, and varied tortures, conflagrations, and other innumerable and unspeakable crimes, sparing neither sex nor age, nor even the priests or ministers of God, nor yet the ornaments or vessels of the churches, nor even the buildings. Now the man of God, did not believe and think, as other men did, regarding the causes from which this most fierce assault and devastation of the foe had arisen and come to pass. But considering these matters more deeply and profoundly, and perceiving in them, above all, the dangers and deaths of souls, since, as it is written, he that increases knowledge increases sorrow, and an understanding heart is a worm in the bones. More than ever, tears were his meat day and night, as he passed through and endured those days of his life, now almost ended, which beyond all others were the most bitter and mournful of his old age. For he saw cities overthrown in destruction, and the resident citizens, together with the buildings on their lands, partly annihilated by the enemy's slaughter, and others driven into flight and dispersed. He saw churches stripped of priests and deacons, and holy virgins and all the monastics scattered in every direction. Here he saw some succumb to torture, and others slain by the sword, while still others in captivity, losing their innocence and faith both in soul and body, received from their foes the harsh and evil treatment of slaves. He saw the hymns and praises of God perish from the churches, the church buildings in many places consumed by fire, the regular services which were due to God cease from their appointed places, the holy sacraments no longer desired, or if someone did desire them, no one could easily be found to administer them. When they gathered in flight amid the mountain forests, in the caves and caverns of the rocks, or in any other kind of retreat, some were captured and put to death, while others were robbed and deprived of the necessary means of sustenance, so that they gradually perished out of hunger. Even the bishops of the churches and the clergy who by the help of God did not chance to meet the foe, or if they did meet them, escape their hands, he saw despoiled and stripped of all their goods, and begging in abject poverty. Nor could they all be furnished with that by which they might be relieved. Of the innumerable churches, he saw only three survive, namely those of Carthage, Hippo, and Cirta, which by God's favor were not demolished. These cities, too, still stand, protected by human and divine aid. Although, after Augustine's death, the city of Hippo, abandoned by its inhabitants, was burned by the enemy. Amid these calamities, he was consoled by the thought of a certain wise man who said, "He is not to be thought great, who thinks it strange that wood and stones should fall and mortals die." But Augustine, being exceedingly wise, daily bewailed all these events, and it increased his grief and sorrow that this same enemy also came to besiege the city of the Hipporegians, which had so far maintained its position. With its defense at this time, the late Count Boniface had been entrusted with an army of allied Goths. For almost 14 months they shut up and besieged the city, and they even cut off its sea coast by blockade. We ourselves, with other of our fellow bishops from the neighboring regions, took refuge in this city, and remained in it the whole time of the siege. Consequently, we very frequently conversed together, and meditated on the awful judgments of God laid bare before our eyes, saying, "Righteous art thou, O Lord, and upright are thy judgments." And in our common grief, with groanings and tears. We besought the Father of Mercies and the Lord of all Consolation that he vouchsafe to sustain us in this tribulation. Chapter 29. Augustine's Last Illness. And it chanced at one time, while we were seated with him at the table and were conversing together, that he said to us, "I would have you know that in this time of our misfortune, I ask this of God, either that he may be pleased to free this city, which is surrounded by the foe, or, if something else seems good in his sight, that he make his servants brave for enduring his will, or at least, that he may take me from this world unto himself." And when he had taught us these words, together with him, we all joined in a like petition to God Most High, for ourselves and for all our fellow bishops, and for the others who were in this city. And lo, in the third month of the siege, Augustine succumbed to fever and began to suffer in his last illness. In truth, the Lord did not deprive his servant of the reward of his prayer. For what he asked with tears and prayers for himself and the city, he obtained in due time. I know also that both while he was priest and bishop, when asked to pray for certain demoniacs, he entreated God in prayer with many tears, and the demons departed from the men. In like manner, when he was sick and confined to his bed, there came a certain man with a sick relative, and asked him to lay his hand upon him, that he might be healed. But Augustine answered that if he had any power in such things, he would surely have applied it to himself first of all. To which the stranger replied that he had had a vision, and in his dream these words had been addressed to him: "Go to the Bishop Augustine, that he may lay his hand upon him, and he shall be whole." Now, when Augustine heard this, he did not delay to do it. And immediately God caused the sick man to depart from him, healed. End of part 7.